This is a difficult day for a couple reasons. First of all, Chanita's with us, and she's just come back from Shiva. Her mom, your mom's name was?
Perel Mindel.
Bat Menachem Mendel.
And Sivya.
And so our learning should be Ilui Nishmata. Also, Am Yisrael lost a great leader yesterday with the passing of Shimon Ben Yitzchak, Shimon Peres, who I think was, in a sense, the greatest embodiment of the saying that Ein Lecha Adam Shein Lo Sha'ah. Because certainly, and it isn't well known enough, the role that that Shimon Peres played before statehood. But perhaps that was the most critical contribution, is that we were trying to get armed in order to be able to open up business in 1948, and that only happened because we were able to get arms that were floating around Europe, mainly Czechoslovakia, and that was Shimon Peres who spearheaded that. Ben Gurion sent him to go and negotiate and to get arms from World War II surplus that really helped arm the Haganah. Of course, it is better known, although all the details will never be known, about how the fact that Israel became had the nuclear ability, which is, of course, we understand it as a deterrent, was all really Shimon Peres' doing. And the reason I say Ein Lecha Adam Shein Lo Sha'ah, which is a critical statement of Chazal about the value of a human being, is because his political career was actually so difficult that the joke went that they once had a competition in Israel for who the biggest loser was, and he lost. He lost almost every election, every opportunity. And then, Ein Lecha Adam Shein Lo Sha'ah, he restored. He didn't just serve with tremendous distinction and great honor and brought honor to the state of Israel as the president of Israel. He restored an office that had lost a lot of its luster due to some of the people that sat in that chair beforehand. And we forget that, because once Shimon Peres was in and was going around the world and representing Israel so beautifully and welcoming diplomats and advancing what he saw as the larger vision of the political cause, but outside of the political arena, we forgot how terribly distraught the office of the president of Israel had become over the last few administrations, if you will. And so he restored that, and he really brought it. It's odd to say, because with his passing, the typical headline has been the last of the founding fathers, right? And it's accurate. But it's interesting that Shimon Peres is actually, more than anybody else, if you think about it, the guy who walked us into the next generation. More than anybody else, he's the guy who walked us into the last generation. And the last of the founding fathers, in that sense, was really Yitzhak Rabin. But Shimon Peres was the guy who really moved us because of his really his impressive ability as an octogenarian plus to be flexible and to see new world realities and to adjust to them and to see Israel in a new light and present Israel in a new light to the world. And a big part of what he presented was, in spite of the fact that we need to be on guard all the time, a smiling face, a technologically advanced face. If there was a face that belonged to Startup Nation, it was the face of Shimon Peres. And he did so much to advance Israel, and I dare say that some of the core points that our Prime Minister made in the UN in an amazing speech last week are points that actually happened because of Shimon Peres. Is the fact that you could theoretically say, I know it's a little bit of a dream, but theoretically say that the time will come that the UN is going to shift around and that the countries in the world are going to look differently at Israel, to a large extent is due to the diplomacy and the presentation that Shimon Peres, with which he presented us to the rest of the world, and he will be lost. We will feel his loss greatly, because also I think it's accurate to say we don't really have anybody who could step into his shoes. Not only we don't have anybody who could touch us back to pre-1948, who was any sort of a leader, but also we don't really have anybody who can represent with such moral authority the state, the case for the state of Israel with also such diplomacy and such intelligence. And he zichro baruch, and our last of this series of four shirim in tefillah, in memory of Shimon ben Yitzchak, Visara, who served his people and who had a very interesting saying when he said, what is the most important thing that you accomplish? He said, it's what I do tomorrow. Right? And he had lots of visions, lots of goals for Israel. And of course, the only one he didn't accomplish was whatever was going to come next. And so that falls on us, and we have to continue to do everything we can to promote the case of Medinat Yisrael and Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael in the world, because that's the first thing that happens when a leader passes, is that all the rest of us have a bigger burden. In the last 3 weeks, we have looked at tefillah in Tanakh. I know. We've looked at tefillah in Tanakh. We've looked at tefillah as an obligation in Tanakh the first week, and as the experience of tefillah over the next couple of weeks. Now I'd like to look at how it developed in Chazal. And if you recall, at the end of last week's shiur, I suggested that the way that tefillah developed in the rabbinic period, which is really the end of the Bayit Sheni and then critically after the Churban, is really built on Bayit Sheni tefillah. We saw in Nehemiah the beginnings of a communal tefillah, of gathering tefillah, tefillah that wasn't just about an immediate need on the spot, but about praise and about thanksgiving and about mentioning a history of Am Yisrael as part of it. And so I'd like to actually jump you ahead. We're going to jump back to the most critical period, I believe, in the development of tefillah, which is the period of Yavneh. But we're going to jump ahead first to the middle of the 3rd century in Eretz Yisrael to the following debate. It's a historic debate, kind of, sort of, maybe. And it's a very famous sugya in Masechet Brachot. It's source number 1. Itmar, Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina amar, tefillot avot tiknum. Now, what is he claiming? He's claiming, as we will see, he's not going to read through the whole sugya, he's claiming that each one of the three avot established a model of praying at a particular time. He is not making the claim, nobody could make the claim, that they established saying the 19 brachot that we say, notice only 19 brachot that we say, you know, within Zman Tefillah based on the Magen Avraham, right? He's not making that suggestion. But he is suggesting that Avraham modeled, created the notion of having a regular prayer in the morning, Yitzchak in the afternoon, Yaakov in the evening, and Rabbi Shimon Levi Amar Tefillot Keneged Tmidim Tiknum. That the Tefillot were established to correspond with the Korban Tamid. Now, is their dispute simply historic? You could say that it is. But it may be cutting deeper than that, may be cutting to really what the core of tefillah is about. All right, so let's take a look at a little bit of the sources, and we'll get a clue. The Gemara goes on to say, Tanya Kavated Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, Tanya Kavated Rabbi Shimon Levi, we have a brayta supporting each position, which, by the way, should already make us a little nervous, because it means that if these positions really are antagonistic to each other, are against each other, we're now piling on the contrary proofs. We have a proof supporting A, proof supporting B, and B and A are against each other. So maybe we have to calm down a little bit and say maybe A and B are not against each other. And maybe they are reflecting different perspectives in tefillah and different components. So the Gemara is going to end up there. The first brayta, Tanya Kretel Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, simply in Aleph Bet and Gimel, simply quotes, and it's interesting because each one of the avot actually prayed. We saw that 2 weeks ago. Avram prayed for Avimelech's household to become healed, Yitzchak prayed for a kid, and Yaakov prayed to be saved from Esav. And yet we quote none of those psukim, and instead they quote the pasuk about Avraham standing, getting up early to stand at the place where he had stood earlier, and that's when he's watching the destruction of Sodom. And say, oh, the word standing alludes to tefillah, and we bring a pasuk. Then Yitzchak, when Rivka shows up on camelback, Yitzchak is Vayetzei Lasuach Basadel Lifnot Arev. This is in the end of the day. I say, Lasuach is a reference to tefillah based on another pasuk in Tehillim. And then Yaakov, when Yaakov encounters Beit El and sleeps there, he has a vision, but there's no tefillah there. But it says, Vayifka b'makom, he encounters the place. And we say, oh, to encounter is also a language of tefillah, as we find in a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. So using this midrashic tool of, shall we say, flexible philology, what words may mean based on their usage elsewhere, we find that Avraham had a place where he had gone a morning and gone another morning to now pray. Yitzchak went out in the afternoon to pray, and Yaakov came to a place and prayed, based on the Midrashic interpretation. And so that's his argument. And then the second brayta, I left some space, V'tanika v'ted Rabbi Shimon Levi, is actually a brayta we're going to see in its earlier source, which is in the Tosefta, which simply goes through the times for the regular tefillot and says, why are the times what they are? The times are what they are because they're based on the Korban Tamid. So why is it that tefillat shacharit is until chatzot? It's because the Korban Tamid could be brought any time in the morning. Why does Rabbi Yehuda disagree and say tefillat shacharit has to be by 4 hours, which is how we rule, which is why on our thing it says 10:37 or 10:42 or 9:59, whatever the Zman Tefillah is because Rabbi Yehuda says the Korban Tamid had to be brought by 4 hours. In other words, they disagree about what happened in the times of the Mikdash, which neither of them saw, not Rabbi Yehuda nor his opponents in this, disputants, but they had a tradition as to how late the Korban Tamid could be brought. He said it couldn't be brought any later than 4 hours. Shacharit's 4 hours. Why is Mincha in the time it is in the afternoon, and different opinions, Rabbi Yehuda versus Chachamim, based on when they thought the time of the afternoon Tamid was? And then they say, why is Arvit? And Arvit's going to become a sticky point in this. Why is Arvit all night? Because the limbs and fats of the Korbanot that are brought during the day are burnt all night. Which, by the way, is an interesting take, because that means suddenly Arvit is in a whole different category. Because you start off by saying Tfilot Kineget Tmidin, they were corresponding with the Tamid. But here he's saying there's no Korban Tamid, there is no Korban at night, so why is nighttime tefillah even exist? Because there's something going on in the Beit HaMikdash at that time. What's the something? The finishing the job from the earlier Korbanot. And by the way, how long did that last? All night. So when's Arvit? All night. Right? And then we find that tefillat Musaf is all day. Why? Because Korban Musaf can be brought all day. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say Musaf can only be until 7 hours? Because Korban Musaf. So in other words, what we're presented with is a brayta which aligns the times of tefillah, only the times, exactly with the times of the Korban Tamid, and any disagreements of one bleed into the others. If you disagree about what time the Korban Tamid, what its time parameters, you'll have the same disagreement, the same position about tefillah. Yeah, Jason.
Two things. So
what you're asking is, why is Ma'ariv at the end of the road here? Right, and that itself, although by the way, you notice in both positions it starts in the morning, because Avram's also in the morning, right? Is that, and this is a discussion, by the way, that actually takes place at the very beginning of Masachat Brachot in a different context, is the assumption throughout Chazal is that the day starts in the morning. And I'm not even referencing the famous Rashbam at the beginning of Bereishit. Just that the day starts in the morning, especially when it comes to tefillah, because tefillah is associated with the Beit HaMikdash. And the Beit HaMikdash's day of business starts a little before dawn, or maybe way before dawn, and goes until the next night. It doesn't start at nightfall. Why? Because you're bringing korbanot starting from early in the morning, and they have to be consumed or burned up or whatever by the end of that night. So tefillah, which is, as you can see, very closely aligned with Avodah and the Mikdash, therefore is something that really begins in the morning. Right? And you think about it even on an experiential level. Our tefillot, the biggest tefillah of the day by far is Shacharit.
The Siddur starts there.
Right? What?
The Siddur starts.
And the Siddur starts there. Right? Siddur doesn't start in Arvit. Wow. Interesting. Shabbat Siddurim often start in Arvit.
Yeah.
Right?
Or
Mincha of Shabbat.
Yeah.
But regular Siddurim, you notice they all start with Shacharit. No. And Shacharit is when you have the big Psukei de Zimra, and Shacharit is when you have even a longer Berchut Kriyat Shema than you have in the morning, right, with Kedusha. And Shacharit is when you have the additional Kedusha de Sidra, right? And Shacharit, of course, is when you have any additions are always in Shacharit. And by the way, Slichot is a pre-Shacharit thing. Yes, we have a minhag some nights to do it at night, but it's really a pre-Shacharit thing. So Shacharit seems to be kind of the beginning of that. What's the source of associated with the Korban? We're actually going to take a look at that.
Tefillat Arvit Rishut makes sense.
Oh, very good. We're going to get to that problem. When Ati brings up that Tefillat Arvit Rishut, then becomes a big problem in here, is how do we look at Arvit? According to the first position, Arvit is just like Shacharit and Mincha. Yaakov and Yitzchak and Yaakov. But according to the second position, Arvit seems to be certainly not as significant. And let me ask you this, if we were to somehow have a super flame, which by the way they had, but a super duper flame, and burn up all of the Korban Olah by the end of the day, would there be anything we had to do at night? No. We're just doing what needs to get finished. which means that there's no actual obligation. It's just something that needs to get taken care of. And so how do we reckon our vita in this whole picture? We're going to take a look at that. It's a very good question. The end of the sugya raises the problem of arvit, but it also raises a different problem. Is that if you say tefillot avot tiknum, then where's musaf? Where'd musaf come from? And musaf clearly is connected to korbanot, because what are the days on which we say tefillot musaf? Days in which there was an extra korban. Okay, and then it's brought, and then we say musaf after shacharit, because you first bring the korban tamid, and then you bring the korban musaf. So it's clearly patterned after that. So the position of tefillot avot tiknum is a little bit difficult if we want to take it all the way. And therefore, the final line of the sugya, which I underlined here, is tefillot avot tiknum vasmechinu rabbanana korbanot. What does that mean? It means that, at least the simple read of it is, that Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov established the idea of praying at particular points of the day, morning, afternoon, evening, as a very nebulous thing. The idea that in the beginning of the day, a person should get up and pray before God. The idea towards the end of the day, a person should, at night, you should pray to God. Okay. And the rabbis came along and said, you know what? We've got korbanot that God told us to bring at particular points of the day. We're going to align them. In other words, the rabbi said, once there's tefillah during this general time period, and exactly at that time period, there has to be a korban brought, we'll align it and say the zman fits, and therefore maybe some other things fit. Now, it's interesting because 3 weeks ago when we first looked at tefillah, we saw the Rambam's position, and one of the things, and not to point it out to me before lunch, is that the Rambam says in his Hilchot Tefillah is that the essential mitzvah of tefillah is once a day. Remember the Rambam's position. Tefillah d'oraita is once a day. What's the mitzvah? To stand facing the mikdash wherever it is. So you're in the midbar, in Midbar Sinai, wandering around. You turn around and you face the mishkan, wherever it may be, north, south, east, or west. And you praise, and you request, and you give thanks. The words, the amount of times, all that kind of stuff is later, but that's the essential mitzvah. So you can see that there's an immediate connection, at least with mishkan, not with korbanot. So we have to see how this all plays out.
Is it Mishkan, or is it the shame, you know, the makom that God rests his name?
Mishkan, that's what the Mishkan is. Exactly.
But is it because of the korbanot?
No, I didn't say that. I said Mishkan.
Right.
Mishkan. Okay, now, if you take a look, there is an attempt here in the Tosefta to try to find some of what later develops as tefillah in earlier sources. So, for instance, in source 2, look at Halacha Bet. This is in the Tosefta Brachot, Per Gimel. Yachol yehin pala v'holech kol ayom kulo. I might think you should just daven all day. Or may mean you could daven anytime you want. This is a very sticky issue, what I just said. Daven anytime you want. Pirash Daniel, and do we have a pasuk of Daniel? That Daniel would daven 3 times a day. A part of the problem here becomes, this is why I left Daniel out of our Tanakh survey, was that when was Daniel? And when was Daniel written, and etc. It's difficult. Yachol Shibal Agola. I might think that this was only something that happened when he first went into exile. Why would I think that? We're going to get an answer to that. Why would I think that Daniel only prayed 3 times a day once he came into Babel and not when he was in Israel? That's why when it describes Daniel praying 3 times a day, it's like he used to do since ever, meaning it's what he always did, even when he was in Israel. And then we go through the famous passages from Chana that tell us how to daven. You have to stand, you have to move your lips, you can't have your voice be heard, all the things that we learn from Chana. Okay? Turn the page, and I want to show you what develops, and I have a little story to tell you about this. What develops, really, and now we're going to actually go backwards a little bit to the period of Yavin, backwards from the first sugya that we had, back to the period of Yavne, and we're going to see an interesting thing develop. And the little story is that one time I was in Israel. In those days, the Yemei Yun were Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It was not a full week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I was in Israel. I got there on Thursday. Friday, I went on a tiyul. And we were on a tiyul, actually, in the Neve Ilan, in Maleach HaMisha. And the middle of the tiyul, I was talking to somebody. I said, you know, I've been dealing with a question with somebody about Piyut for about 5 years, and I haven't got an answer. He said, why don't you call Ezra Fleischer? Right? Who's Ezra Fleischer? Professor Ezra Fleischer was probably the world expert on the history of tefillah. Him and Naftali Vitter, probably the world experts on the history of tefillah. I said, call him. Here's his number. I call him, right? And he said, well, you know, I'm going to meet next week. I said, I'm busy Monday, Tuesday. Well, Sunday. But Sunday I'm free. Good. Come to the Sifra Aldo meet, the National Library, which is at the university, and meet me at 12. I said, great. So I called my cousin, Hanan Eshel Zichro Livracha, who was the head of the archaeology department at Bar Ilan at the time. And I said, I'm meeting with Fleischer at noon on Sunday. What do I do? So he said, meet me at the library at 11. I'll show you around a little bit. Okay, good. I get there at 11. He shows me around a little bit. And then about 11:45, he says, oh, by the way, if you're going to meet with Fleischer, maybe you want to look at this first. And hands me a 90-page article on the development of tefillah. I scanned it very quickly. I came in. It was a delightful man. He's since passed away. His delightful manner was very cute, is that he didn't have an answer to my question, but he thought that perhaps Professor Frankel would have an answer. So he picked up, Yona, yesh tachad. It's just great to be around, you know, all this first name stuff. But anyhow, and nobody had an answer to the question. His article, which is really a groundbreaking article, is sort of the core of some of what I'm going to share with you. Because it's all based really on the Tanaitic literature of the time. Take a look at the top of page 2. We have 4 Mishnayot in a row that are from the 4th parak of... actually, that should be Aleph Bet Gimel Daled. 4 Mishnayot in a row, which are the first 4 Mishnayot of Parak Daled of Brachot. And part of the problem we have is that when we study Mishnayot that are attached to a Gemara, that have a Gemara attached to them, unlike, let's say, Taharot or something, we typically study with the Gemara and we don't see the flow of the Mishnayot. Or if we're doing Mishnayot because for a Shloshim for somebody, we sometimes zip through, we don't really pay close attention. You will see something phenomenal happen in these 4 Mishnayot. Mishnah Aleph, Tfilat HaShachar Ad Chatzot, Rabbi Yudah Omer Ad Arba Sha'ot, Tfilat HaMincha Ad Ha'erev, Rabbi Yudah Omer Plag HaMincha. We're going to talk about what that means. Shamu Safin Kol Hayom. Rabbi Yudah Omer Ad Shavuot. That's exactly what we saw about the Zmanei Tefillah. Very fixed, very set, and disputes as to when you can pray. Next Mishnah, Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana Hayam Itpalav Bechnesato Levit Midrash Biyisiyato Tefillah Ktsara. Nechunya Ben Akana. It's often people have these things. There's Madbekot that they have that they printed up that you can put inside your Gemara. I used to have when I was a kid. Tefillah Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana. When you walk into the Beit Midrash, you should ask Hashem to support your learning and help you out. Not support in that way. To help your learning. And on the way out, you give thanks for, right? Right? Right. He used to pray on his way in. That was his thing. Amrulo mama kom tefillah zu. So his colleagues said, why are you praying? He said, on the way I pray in, I ask that God correct me and make sure I don't make mistakes. And on the way out, I give thanks for the fact that I'm in the Beit Midrash. Good. Mishnah Gimel, it's Mark Tate. Rav Gamliel Omer, b'chol yom yitpala adam shmon esrei. What does Rav Gamliel say? Every day, what do you have to say? Shmon esrei. Rav Yeshua Omer, me'ein shmon esrei. What does me'ein shmon esrei mean? It's machloket in the Gemara what it means, but it's some sort of an abbreviated tefillah. An abbreviated tefillah. Rav Akiva Omer, im shkurat tefillah tov b'fi yitpala shmon esrei v'mlav me'ein shmon esrei. He seems to find the middle ground, which is if your tefillah is very fluent to you, say Shmon Esrei. If not, say the Mi'ein Shmon Esrei. But notice, the first Mishnah was talking about very concrete limitations and parameters. These many hours, that dispute about it. The second Mishnah was, I feel like praying and thanking God for this. Well, here's my reason. Every time I go to the Beit Midrash, by the way, he didn't say every time I walk to the Beit Midrash, between Zman Milcha and Zman Arvi. So every time I walk to the Beit Midrash, what was the third Mishnah? A three-way machloket, or two-way machloket with a middle ground, about the form of tefillah. Look at Mishnah Dalet. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, and this is Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, Dahainu, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Gamliel, famous threesome of the period immediately after the Churban. That's critical. This is the beginning of Yavne. Ha'oset tefillato keva ein tefillato tachanunim. What does that mean? Literal translation, what does that mean? How set tefillah to keva?
If it's set, it's not going to be received.
If it's a set thing, then it's not going to be supplication. Is he saying that therefore you're actually not yotze, you're not doing tefillah? Or is he saying it's not ideal? So the Gemara tries to give different twists as to what keva may mean. that it's Domei Alav Kamasui and Yechol HaChadesh Badavar, etc. But the simple read of it is that Rabbi Eliezer, this is what kind of the core of Fleischer's article, is that Rabbi Eliezer is really coming to oppose Rabban Gamliel. What did Rabban Gamliel say? B'chol Yom Adami Pavel Shmon Esrei. And what's Rabbi Eliezer saying? If you create a set form, then it's no longer coming from the heart. Now notice how these four Mishnayot bounce back and forth, reflecting a particular tension, and it's a tension that we are all, and if not, we should be, aware of. The first Mishnah talks about clear contours for tefillah. The second one is, I want to daven when I walk into the Beit Midrash, special tefillah. Third one, clear contours, Shmon Esrei, main Shmon Esrei. What's the fourth one? Well, Ezra says, tefillah tol kaveh, tefillah tol tachanunim. And he continues, watch this. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, hamalech b'makom sakana. What does that mean? You're going somewhere, it's dangerous. Mitpalel tefillah ktsara. Now, what does he mean, mitpalel tefillah ktsara? Does he mean, I haven't yet prayed, and now I'm in this dangerous place, so I would do, or is he saying,
shorten your prayer because you're in danger, you don't want to take too
long. Possibility one, I didn't yet say shacharit. And now the sun is coming up, and I find that if I stop and pull over and really daven properly, then I'm going to be beat up.
Right.
So instead, just say a short tefillah. Or is he saying, besides tefillot that are set, when you're in a place of danger, pray to God. Right. You're coming to Beit Midrash, pray to God for success there. You're in a place where there's wild snakes, pray to God to save you. Tefillat HaDerech, right? Tefillat HaDerech, which is one form of that, right? So there's two different ways to say it. And he actually has a nusach. Hoshea Hashem Tavachat Shevit Yisrael. It's based on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. B'chol Parshat Tebur Yitzachin Fanecha Baruch Atah Hashem Shomayat Tefillah. So he kind of wiggle waggles here. On the one hand, he says you're in a place of danger, so say a tefillah that reflects that danger. On the other hand, here's the words to use, or maybe he's saying here some suggested words to use. What's happening here is the following: as much as we would like to predate tefillah as this kind of experience to pre-Chorban, we can't do it. We just don't have any evidence to it. We do have a famous Mishnah in Masachet Tamid that talks about the Kohanim leading tefillah for the other Kohanim in the Azara, Baruchu, Bracha, Achat, etc. But there's no tefillah in there. There's Kriyat Shema, there's Aseret HaDibrot, interestingly enough. There's Birchat Kohanim. There's Birchat Yotzeror, Havarabah, Machloket, which one? There's no tefillah. Batei Knesset already existed. What was a Beit Knesset for? Well, what's the name? It was a gathering place. But it wasn't necessarily a place of tefillah. What now happened? We are in Yavne. We're in Yavne. The Mikdash is destroyed. We can't even go to visit Yerushalayim. Romans won't let us. We'll go once a year. All right, we can't go to Yerushalayim. We're in Yavne. What do we do? So one of the things that we do is, if you recall, we gather eyewitness testimony to things that happened in the Beit HaMikdash, and we record it, and that's Masachet Eduyot. Because we're convinced that we're going to rebuild, we want to know what to do. That's, first of all, in Yavne. And the second thing is that there is a huge hole missing in the communal experience. Let's roll back a little bit. Let's say it's the year 40, not 75, the year 40. I'm up in Afula farming. But every morning, what do I know is happening while I'm farming? There's a Korban Tamid being brought. And all of Am Yisrael is sort of drawn together. And by the way, 1 week, every 6 months, what do I and everybody else from Afula do? We go into the local big town, which actually is Afula, and we meet in the Beit Knesset. We fast all 4 days. We have Kriyat HaTorah. What's that called? Ma'amadot. The Mishnah and Tanit. Right? The Ma'amadot. So I had this communal connection to what's going on in Yerushalayim, in the Mikdash, even from a distance. That's all gone. There's no Mikdash, no Korban Tamid. That's why there's such a big deal in the Mishnah about Batel HaTamid. You know, the Shivasa Batam with Batel HaTamid. The Korban Tamid was this daily unifying experience for Jews all over the world, and that's gone. And now you have essentially four competing personalities in the mix in Yavne. Who are the four, and they're not competing with each other, as you'll see. Who are the four competing personalities? You have Rabban Gamliel. Who's Rabban Gamliel? He's the head of the Sanhedrin, the son of the head of the Sanhedrin, the grandson of the head of the Sanhedrin. Go back to Hillel. He is somebody who's born into leadership and understands the awesome responsibility with which he's been given of leadership post Churban. Who else is there? Rabbi Yeshua. Who's Rabbi Yeshua? Rabbi Yeshua is a Levi who, as a young man, worked in the Beit HaMikdash. Who else is there? Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, by all accounts, is the most brilliant man of the generation. Nobody doubts that. And Rabbi Eliezer is also an iconoclast, in a sense that he's not that concerned. He's going to say what he thinks is the truth. And the story, of course, of Tanur Shel Achnai is the most famous story that we're talking about, but there's other stories. Rabbi Eliezer. Of course, he's concerned about his colleagues. He's a person of great midot, but in the sense of looking for the truth, and he's someone who still believes in prophetic truth, as could seen in that story of Tanur Shel Achnai. And then you have Rabbi Akiva, the younger, who comes in, who, in a sense, has this picture of the future. He's the one who seems to have the most forward-looking thing. And, of course, the most famous story through Akiva in that regard is, of course, his laughter on Har Tzofim. Okay. Here we are in Yom. So what does Rabbi Gamliel say you got to do? We've got to have set tefillot. We've got to come together for it. Shem Gamliel, by the way, in Rosh Hashanah, is the one who says, Shleach Tzibur Motzei Et Rabbim Yidei Chovatan. This has to be a communal davening. So Rabbi Gamliel says, we have to have tefillah. And it has to be set. There has to be a set procedure to it. By the way, what else does Rabbi Gamliel say? So take a look at this famous machloket that we have in source 4. Rabbi Gamliel is of the opinion that tefillat avit chovah. Avit's an obligation. What is Rabbi Shua's position? Tefillat avit reshut. It's not just about Arvit. It's also about the whole thing of tefillah. Is tefillah, I'm suddenly in need, I'm going to pray. I suddenly feel gratitude, I'm going to pray. I'm going to let it out. Or, it's time for davening. What's the reality? The reality is both are true. The reality is, what was tefillah up until the Churban? It was only type 2. That's what we found in our survey. That's kind of why we did the survey. We found in our survey that tefillah overwhelmingly was a reaction to certain things. Say Thanksgiving, Chana's tefillah. It's another kind of Thanksgiving, David's tefillah, after told he couldn't build the Beit HaMikdash. But nonetheless, it's a personal reflection, Thanksgiving, of course, great need. Suddenly, tefillah takes on a whole different face. So tefillah is now a regular, 3 times a day, opportunity for the community to come together and connect in what essentially is a replacement for that connection we had during the Korban Tamid. And that's why Chazal say, Tfilot, Keneged Tmidim Tiknu. But don't think for a minute that the notion of praying starts then. Tfilot Avot Tiknu. The notion of prayer is an ancient notion. But the fixed and the time and the context and everything else, that's something that comes as that replacement. And the tension builds. So what does Rabbi Gamliel say? Keva, keva, keva. What does Rabbi Eliezer say? How said tefillah tel keva, ain't tefillah tel tachanunim. And by the way, everybody in this room is familiar with that problem. We live that problem every day. We're going to live that problem in 5 minutes from now. We're going to get up and say mincha, and what's the problem we have? On the one hand, we have to say mincha. On the other hand, my heart's not all the way into it. Right? Maybe the day that we're honoring the memory of our president, maybe a little more into it, okay? But it's hard every day to do that. Nobody can look themselves in the mirror and say, yeah, I have kavanah every time, no problem. My heart's always overflowing with feeling every time I daven. Come on. It's hard. And so that's Rebbe Eliezer. And there's a tussle going on there. And you can see it in the Mishnayot that bounce back and forth between Zman and Beit HaKnesset, Shmon Esrei and Makom Sakana. And it's that tension that's really kind of playing out in all of these sugyot. And for instance, it just as a small example, you take a look at the bottom of the page, because there's a lot of other sources here, but at the bottom of the page, I'll suggest one other thing in the middle source, is a story about a Baal Tefillah. Now, important note, there were no Sidurim then because there was no Sidur then, meaning there was no set Tefillah in the times of Chazal, throughout the times of the Gemara. There was the notion of Birchot Kriyat Shema and of Shema, of course, and the tefillah itself was a set amount of brachot with certain topics that have to be covered in each bracha, but the specific words, that's up to the Shleach Tzibur. So here the Shleach Tzibur gets in front of Rabbi Chanina. What does he say? Ha'el, ha'gadol, ha'gibor, ha'nara. And he keeps going. Ha'adir, ha'yarui, ha'adzuz, right? Rabbi Chanina, wait till he finished. What did he do? He went up to him and said, you done? You finished? Have you praised God now to the max? And he says, even Ha'el HaGadol HaGibor Manora, we couldn't say if it weren't for the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu said it, and Anshei Knesset HaGadol repeated it, Nehemiah repeated it. Otherwise, what right do we have to praise God and say and describe God? Very powerful thing. But that's exactly the tension going on. On the one hand, there's a form. On the other hand, there's got to be a feeling. But the feeling, of course, has to be bounded by a certain form. When you take a look at this very small piece, source 5, we'll end with this. The Gemara asks the question, why are there 18 brachot? And of course, it becomes a funny question because we come up with great explanations for why there's 18 brachot, and we say, oops, back to the drawing board, there's 19. The Gemara does that. It says, why are there 18 brachot? So here in the Bible, they give three different reasons. Why 18? Nobody says chai. That's the sister gift shop. That's not not in the Gemara. Okay? One answer is that if you look in Mizmor LeDavid, Tilim Chavtet, which Chazal always saw as a template for tefillah, there's 18 mentions of God's name in there. Another opinion is there are 18 mentions of God's name in the three parshiyot of Kriyat Shema. And the other is 18 vertebrae. I don't know. That's what they say. So then they turn and say, okay, how do you deal with 19? Oh, so 19 is El HaKavod Hirim, which is not God's name. And by the way, it makes sense because El HaKavod Hirim, the powerful God, has thundered. And then, of course, the 19th bracha in the Bavli is Lomal Shinim, right, against the enemies. Or the Echad of Kriyat Shema. Or a little vertebrae that you have at the top. Again, Chvaistish. What are they trying to do? There's a set, the Yerushalmi, by the way, has five for you, it's not three. There's a structure. And it's easy for that structure, and we all know this. And by the way, I will tell you, the single most discussed topic, hands down without question, of high school educators around the world, including in Israel, is tefillah. The single biggest challenge in any yeshiva high school or girls' school, anything, is tefillah. Certainly in yeshiva high school. Very difficult issue. Donnie, where'd you go to high school?
Public high school.
Big problem with tefillah there. Okay, good. Right, I'm looking at guys who went to the school, right? It's a very difficult thing. Okay? In Israel, it's difficult. It's difficult everywhere. And by the way, it's not just in high school, but as educators responsible, it's difficult for adults too. So notice the tension that happens. On the one hand, we've got 18 brachot, but we've got to make them mean something. So the 18 brachot connected to Shem Hashem, the 18 brachot connected to Shem Hashem and Kriyat Shema, the 18 brachot connect to your back, which bends over when you daven. What we do is we have a structure, and then we try to infuse that structure with meaning. Because tefillah is all about this balance. Now, the balance didn't exist before the Chorban because there was no need. Because tefillah beforehand was thanksgiving, an outpouring of feeling, of request, of fear. But now, it's a whole different story. Because there's also a requirement for us to have this regular connection with each other, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as a community that is replicating the Quran Tamid. And that's where a lot of this tension comes in. So hopefully over the course of the last 4 weeks, we've gotten a glimpse, and thank you, Jason, for asking for this, that we've gotten a look not only at how tefillah develops through the time of Tanakh, but how that impacts on the way that tefillah ultimately develops in our day. Which, by the way, that's another 4 weeks at least to go from Chazal to today. Because going through the period of the Gaonim and into the period of the Rishonim, you see fascinating changes before we get to what tefillah more or less looks like in our day.